Week was the critical moment when not just Yonatan, but Shaul acknowledges to David that he will be the leader of the Jewish people. And we have this very poignant scene where David holds up the corner of that cloak and he effectively says to Shaul, look, if I was out to get you, we wouldn't be having this conversation. And for a moment that old Shaul returns and he says those four poignant words, HaKolcha Zeh B'ni David, is that your voice? My son, David. And in that moment, Shaul is back to himself, as it were. But we noted that it's very striking. Despite that rapprochement, David does not go back with Shaul. And we talked about why that was. That Shaul can no longer even really trust himself to a great degree. And David continues on in the wilderness, and Shaul returns to his putative palace, the erstwhile king. But it's known and it's understood that his literal star is fading. And David, who's in the wilderness now, carries with him the true status of the king. Let's begin with a passage from the Medrash.
Rabbi, do you call him the king of the Jews?
Well, he's the king of Israel. Let's put it that way. The king of Israel. The first pasuk in our chapter deals with the death of Shmuel. And it's a poignant moment. Shmuel, of course, anointed two kings in his lifetime. Shaul, to his great disappointment, Shaul is unable to discharge the duties of the office. Shaul is unable to fulfill the great vision that Shmuel had for him. The Navi had described Shmuel as literally being in a state of avelos, of personal mourning, to the point where God said to him when he had to go anoint the new king, the successor to Shaul, Ad matai atam nis'aber el Shaul? How long will you mourn Shaul? And our chapter begins with the death of Shmuel, Vayamu Shmuel, Vayikabtu Chol Yisrael, Vayisvedulo. He was mourned by the entire Jewish people. Vayikberuhu Bebeso Baramah. He was buried in his home in Ramah. Remember that he was that circuit judge. He would go and he would judge the people. He would always come back home. Uchuvaso Haramaso Kisham Beso. He would return every year to his home in Ramah. And at that time, Vayakom David Vayered al Midbar Paran, David goes to Midbar Paran. He cannot stay in the civilized area. He goes back into the wilderness. And it's very poignant, you know, Shmuel is buried at home in Ramah. Remember, he was the child who never had a home. He was raised in the Mishkan. As soon as he was weaned, he grew up from the age of three in the Mishkan. And now this child of the Mishkan finally comes home to eternal rest. And the Koheles Rabbah sets up this chapter that we're about to read, the first of really two parts on the story of Nabal HaKarmeli. Nolad Shmuel lo hirgisha bo bria. You know, when Shmuel was born, says the Medrash, nobody paid any mind. Uchshemes, but when he died, hirgishu hakol. The entire world took notice. Shenemar, Vayamo Shmuel Vayisvedulo Kol Yisrael. And it's a very striking thing. Some people arrive in this world with great fanfare and they amount to nothing. And some people arrive in this world without any newspaper articles and they change the world. And that's what the Medrash is saying, that Shmuel achieved something in his lifetime. Vayamo Shmuel, the Medrash says, In Advar Mamurin El Inyan Nabal. This is meant as an introduction to our chapter. We meet the ignominious figure of Nabal. Shene'emar v'yamu Shmuel v'ish v'ma'on. Amar v'shmuel bar Nachman ha'kol softin. Everybody was eulogizing, v'tokhin. And they were engaging in acts of mourning. Al misas ha'tzadik, because the righteous one, Shmuel, had died. V'zeh ha'rasha, this Nabal. And again, according to some, it wasn't really his name. Nabal means an ingrate. Famously, the Ramban uses the expression Nabal Birshut HaTorah. Somebody who can claim to follow every jot and tittle of halacha, and yet and be a nasty person, be an ungracious person, be an ungrateful person. Hakol softe mitokhen al misa tzadik v'zeh harasha oselo marzeichen. And this rasha is literally a marzeach, is kind of a place of festivity often associated with drinking. Amar Yehuda l'amdachasha kol kofir b'gmilos chesed ki ilu kofir ba'ikar. Somebody who does not acknowledge a gmilos chasadim, it's as if he denies God's existence itself. Aval David HaMelech Olav HaShalom Neha Yehosel Gomel Chesed Lako. He was gracious, kind to everybody. Omer Kain Afilu Hore Gonerag Rode Fonirdaf Gomel Nilo Chesed Kimo Latzadik. Whether the person was a pursuer of the pursued, a murderer, or the victim, David treated everybody with kindness. Hadahu Dechsev Vari V'chastecha V'tachti, O God, I place my trust in your kindness. So what we have here is a fundamental contrast of people. David, who will treat everybody graciously, including Shaul, who tries to kill him, the Rode, probably being alluded to by the Medrash, and Nabal, who we'll see, is a fundamental ingrate. In fact, the Ramban, in a classical essay in Parashas Ha'azinu on the Pasuk, An Nabal v'lo Chacham, that the Jewish people behaved as a nation that is described as Naval, Halahu Abicha, he is your father, O Israel, and yet you deny him, Am Naval V'lo Chacham. The Ramban says the very definition of Naval is somebody who is Meshiv Ra'a Tachas Tova, somebody who repays good with a lack of gratitude. Let's take a look at the story of the encounter between David and Naval. The Ish b'Maon, there was a man in the city of Maon, Umaasehu, and his business, his affairs, were in a place called Carmel. He was in the business of sheep. He was extraordinarily wealthy, a man of enormous means, as we will see in this chapter. Va'ish gadol ma'on, person of great stature, not in the moral sense, but in the material sense. V'lotzon shloshes alafim, v'elef izim, he had 1,000 goats, 3,000 sheep. He must have been one of the greatest holders of flocks in all of Israel. But he b'gzozet sonova karnel, and he was now shearing them. You can imagine the wealth, by today's standards, a multi-millionaire. V'shem ha'ish naval, as we mentioned, probably not the name that his parents gave him. V'shem Yishto Abigail, his wife is Abigail, she'll rise to great prominence. Next week we'll take a look. V'ha'isha Tova Seichel V'yifas Toar, she was a woman of great insight and great intellect, Tova Seichel, and she was also very attractive. V'ha'ish Kasher V'ram Alim V'hu Kalbi, and this man was wicked and very difficult, and he was from the house of Kalev. Now what's interesting here is that David is camped in Midbar Paran. Who can remember the significance of Kalev and Midbar Paran? Torah tells us that when Moshe sent forth the spies from the desert to go see the land of Israel, Pasuk says, Vayishlach Osam Moshe Midbar Paran. Actually, Kalev was sent forth from Midbar Paran. Very fascinating thing. Kalev, of course, is from the tribe of Yehuda. And so what we're going to deal with in the encounter between David and Nabal is internal to Shevet Yehuda. That's an important point. And we're going to consider and we're going to explore how in many ways Nabal is kind of like the opposite of Kalev, the family that he comes from. Vayishma David b'midbar, David hears that Nabal is having this shearing. He goes, "Ez Nabal, it's a no." Vayishlach David asaran arim, and so David sends a party of 10 of his men. Vayomer David la'arim alu Carmelo v'atem al Naval u'shmal shaltem lo bishmi v'shalom. Greet him in peace. After all, they're tribesmen, they're kinsmen from Shevet Yehuda. V'amartem ko lechai, and you shall tell him that it should always be thus. V'ata shalom, v'itcha shalom, v'chol asher lecha shalom. We wish you peace. We wish you well. You and all of your endeavors, you and all of your engagements. V'yata shamati, David indicates that he was aware. He goes, Zim lach, ataha rima asher lecha hayu imanu. And now David reveals something that the text has not informed of us up to this point. Lo hechlamnum, lo nivkav lehem uma, kol yivei heyosem bakanal. Remark, David and his men protected Nabal while they were shearing their sheep. Remember, he was an easy target. They had thousands of sheep. Somebody could have come along and raided. The Philistines were raiding all over during this time. And David provided free protective services so that they would be safe. Kol yimei heyosam bakarmel. Sha'alas ra'racha ve'agidu l'cha. The message is given to Nabal. Just ask anybody. V'yimtu na'arim chen be'nacha ki'al yom tovvanu t'nananu reis asher nintzai yachal ha'odacha me'bin chal ha'david. So David very modestly asks, perhaps you can give some, I'm not asking for a lot, he doesn't specify amount, but perhaps you could repay us for our protective services. Remember, David has to worry about subsistence, about survival, he and his 600 men. Vayavon nare David, so David's men take this message to Nabal. Vayidabu al Nabal kechol hadvarim ha'ela b'shem David. Vayaluchu. So they come, they're exhausted, they give the message, and then they stop to rest. And this is Nabal's response. Me David. Who is this David? Me ben Yishai. Who is the son of Yishai? Hayom Rabu Abadin. I can't seem to remember, but you know, there are so many slaves. There are so many servants, Hamif Kartzim, Ish Mipri Adonav, that are rebelling and fleeing from their masters. You know, I'm having trouble remembering which one is David again? Which slave is he again that's in rebellion against it? Help me remember. Scorn, derision, mocking, sarcasm. This is somebody who protected him, and again, what does he have to say? The most abusive, offensive rhetoric. And so I shall take my own bread and my own water and my own meat, asher tabachi v'gozazai, v'natati l'anashim asher lo yadati imi zahema. And you're asking me to give of my wealth, of my estate to people that I don't even know, says Nabal. You think a businessman like me is going to behave that way? And so David's men turn around, and they go back, they go back to David and say, we didn't leave with any food or with anything, you know, that could repay us regarding him, but we did leave with quite a few insults. David says, Suda, get your swords. David gets his sword. 400 men went to war with David. 200 stayed behind to guard whatever provisions they had. Abigail, remember, she was described as Tovat Seichel, of great intellect, of great insight. Now the truth comes out. You can't talk to Nabal. Everybody knows who they're dealing with. But Abigail is told the following. Hine, shalach David malachim mehamidbar levarechet adoneinu vayat bahem. David sent messengers to your husband, to Nabal, to bless him in peace, with graciousness, and Nabal humiliated them. He degraded them. V'anashim tovim lanu ma'od. And you have to understand Abigail, said somebody from the household of Nabal, somebody who worked there. They had been so good to us. These people had taken care of us. Lo hachlamnu. They never harmed us. Lo fakadnu mu'uma. We did not lack for anything. Kol yamei salachnu itam. When we were with them in the desert with the sheep. Biyosenu basadeh. Choma hayu aleinu gam laila gam yumam. They were like a protective fortress wall around us by night and by day. Kol yamei hayosenu imam roim hatzon. They took care of us. They ensured that we would be protected. V'ata de'i u'ri'im atasi. You must do something. The man says to Abigail, ki chaltaha ra'al adoneinu ve'alkol beito, because we can see that David is not going to allow anyone to survive from this entire household after Nabal insulted him in this way. V'hu ben b'liya'al mitaveri lav. As Nabal spoke to him as a ben b'liya'al. Remember that phrase came up earlier in Sefer Shmuel. Not in the context of David, but in the context of Shaul. When Shaul first assumed the monarchy, the b'nei b'liya'al were very scornful of David. They said of Shaul, ma yoshi'enu zeh, how can this person help us? B'nei b'liya'al is always associated with scorn, derision. V'atimaher Abigail. And so Abigail goes into motion. But tikach matayim lacham, look at the riches that they had. It would have been so easy for Nabal to give something. Look at how uncharitable he was. So she takes 200 loaves of bread, mishnayim levayayim, v'chamesh tzon asiyot, and she takes 5 sheep, v'chamesh sayim kali, and an enormous amount of flour, me'at simukim, and raisins, umatayim develim, and 200 figs, v'tasim alachamorim, and she loads up donkey after donkey. Who remembers where that language comes from in the Chumash? And you'll see it's exactly the same story. Ivru lefanai, by Yaakov. Yaakov sends that to, of course, Esav. When Esav was marching with how many men? 400. Remarkable. Abigail is playing the role of Yaakov. And David and his 400 men are almost playing the role of Esav. So you can see what happens. That doesn't come to a military outcome, does it? But this is going to rest in Abigail's hands. Ivru lefanai, she says, and she said not a word to Nabal. He would never have allowed it. He would have said, you're going to give David? Mi David and mi ben Yisha. V'hayahiro cheves al hachamor. V'yoredes b'seisa ahar. V'hinei David ben Ashab yorgim likrasa. V'atif gosho sam. So she was on the donkey, and she's coming down one mountain, and David is coming down another mountain. There's a valley in between. And David was saying to himself this entire time, "But David Amar, Ach Lasheker, what a fool I was! Shamarti as kol asher lazeh b'midbar, I extended myself, I endangered myself for this Nabal in the desert to protect his assets. V'lo nifkad mikol asher lo me'uma, and he lost but nothing. Vayashav li ra'ah tachas tova, and he repaid evil for the good that I had done to him." Ko yas Elohim oyvei David v'chol Yosef. So David uses the language of an oath in God's name. So shall be done to David and even more. Im asher mikol asher lo ad havoker mashdin bekir. If there is a survivor of his household in this morning. David is of course intent on causing Nabal to regret, to say the very least, the way that he treated David. Vatera Abigail at David. Abigail encounters David. Again, they were coming down mountains, a valley between them. Vatimaher, Vatera Meala Chamor. She gets off the donkey. Vatipol Lape David al Kaneha. Vatishtaf Laretz. And she bows down on the ground. Of course, who bowed down? Yaakov bowed down. We'll talk next week.
Sorry, I didn't understand. She fell down.
She didn't fall down. She didn't fall down. She got off again. This is not Rivka. She just bowed down as a sign of it. Now, let's think about this. And we'll talk about it next week, how Abigail saves not just her own household, Nabal is going to meet an ignominious end no matter what, but how she saves David from committing this act of murder. Right? What grounds did David have for killing Nabal? Like, he was obviously in a rage over how his men were treated. But there is a principle in Halakha, and the Gemara elaborates on this, that this was the conversation, so to speak, that they had.
But that's why we don't.
That David is assuming that Nabal deserves to die based on the principle of Mori Ramalos. Somebody who is in rebellion against the king. Now that includes the person who denigrates the king. Say it's saying, Mi David Mi Ben Yishai. Okay, who is David? Who is Ben Yishai? Hello Rabu Ha Vadim Hamid Kartim. Neged Adonai Hem, etc. But Abigail points out to David that Well, it may be true that he's anointed to be the king. It may be very well true that he will be the king. He's not yet the king. Right? And nobody knows that better than David, who just last chapter refused to harm Shaul. And so what Abigail is going to have to do is to save David, in this case, from himself. Because it would be unjustified bloodshed for him to kill the entire household of Nabal. That's right. Now, again, if somebody insults the king, he is liable for the death penalty. But David HaMelech is not yet David HaMelech. Right? And that's the point. And as inappropriate and immoral what Nabal did was, it doesn't rise to the level of Mori Demalchus. And that's going to be Abigail's contribution. Now let's think about this from a slightly different point. We noted Mibar Paran. We noted somebody from the family of Kalev. Now, what would you say was Kalev's defining attribute? What made Kalev who he was? And all the other Meraglim were afraid. They said, Nitna Rosh and Ashuba Mitzrayim, let's go back to Egypt. And what did Kalev insist? Even more than Yehoshua.
He speaks up.
He certainly speaks up.
Not initially.
Vayas Kalev and Amo Moshe. Okay? If God should be desirous of us, God is for us, and He brings us to this land, then we can be successful. The Kalev is deeply courageous. But it's not only that. Because when the Meraglim, as the Torah says, in Parsha Shlach, Vayotziu Dibas Ha'aretz Asher Taru Osa, they started to libel the land. They said, Eretz Ochelas Yosheveha. It is a land that consumes all who dwell there. Eretz Ochelas Yosheveha. It kills its own inhabitants. And Kalev and Yehoshua, they respond, Tova Ha'aretz Me'od Me'od. They acknowledge the basic goodness of the land. As the Torah later says in Sefer Tvarim, V'yafalta V'sarata V'rachta Sashem Lokacha Al Ha'aretz Ha'tova Asher Nasamach, because the land is very good. And therefore you should praise and thank God. It's about acknowledgement of the good. It's about gratitude. Kalev is able to see the goodness that God has given the Jewish people. Of course, Nabal, who comes from the family of Kalev, remember the story takes place around Mibar Paran, where that story actually happened centuries earlier. Nabal does just the opposite. He is Meshiv Ra'ah Tachas Togah. Instead of acknowledging the good, on the contrary, he refuses to repay a debt to David. And he responds with scorn and with derision. We can take things one step further. Remember what the Medrash said at the very beginning. When the entire nation together was mourning Shmuel and his enormous contribution to the Jewish people, first as a shofet, and then as a transitional figure, somebody who was able to usher in the era of monarchy, very difficult for him personally. What did the Medrash say? The entire nation was in mourning, and this guy Nabal was on his own having a good time. He had no sense whatsoever of the national pain. It was only for himself. He was only interested for himself. And he was having this great and raucous party, and for all of his sheep, and all of his personal accumulated wealth. But again, it was very much about him, as opposed to the mood and the needs of the nation. And what's so striking about this is, when you think about Kalev, when you think about his contribution, right? Kalev, fortunately he wasn't successful, but he fought so hard in such a critical moment to save that nation of Jews from destruction. He wasn't successful. He was outnumbered. The Jewish people went with the majority. But Caleb and Yehoshua fearlessly attempted to steer the Jewish people in the right direction at enormous personal risk. Again, there's concern at that moment that Moshe and Aaron are going to be stoned to death. Caleb and Yehoshua are going to be stoned. And yet, at enormous personal risk, they are prepared to sacrifice themselves for the nation. And here this is not found. The entire nation is in mourning. As the Medrash pointed out, it's thrown apart. Now here we have a very important phenomenon. You know, it's not enough to come from the right family. It's not enough to come from a prestigious background. And this is the ultimate contrast that we talked about with Shmuel. Shmuel, the Medrash stated, when he was born, who took notice? Nobody. When he died, the entire Jewish nation took notice. David, even when Shmuel was sent to appoint him as the next king, his own father didn't even take him seriously as a candidate. Shmuel had to ask, is there anybody left in the home? And I'm not, you know, the radio frequency is coming up zero. And he says, oh yeah, well, I have an extra son, but he's out in the field. You wouldn't want to talk to him. And Shmuel says, yeah, bring him here. And Hashem says, that's the one. And he's the forgotten. And so, you know, Naval comes from a great aristocratic family, the family of Caleb. And he's a Naval. And David, what does he come from? He wasn't even taken seriously in his own household. And yet he's going to be the king of the Jewish people. And so what we have here is a great example. How what makes a difference in the end is a person's character. Not what family they come from. Not what connections they have. And David stands as a paradigm of somebody who earned his way. Naval, of course, is somebody who squandered a great legacy of color. A legacy of being prepared to sacrifice the nation became Naval's narcissism. A legacy of gratitude to God for the gift of the land of Israel becomes, unfortunately, in the case of Naval, the very definition of an ingrate. So much can be squandered, and so much can be created. It all depends on who a person is. And that's ultimately the tragedy of this man. We'll continue to discuss it as we finish the story of Naval next week when we talk about Abigail. And that's ultimately the tragedy of this individual. Nothing that we read tonight said that Ish Gadol Me'od. He was blessed with enormous wealth. He had much to be grateful for. And yet he was unable to acknowledge a bit of gratitude, deficiencies of character. David, on the other hand, and this is the remarkable thing, has nothing to his name. He's a refugee. Is to essentially beg for bread. He's traveling with 600 men, we've said it many times, who are from the margins of society, the forgotten, those who again have financial problems, they've fallen out of favor. David is in the completely opposite situation in life, and yet he behaves with graciousness. And Naval, who has everything a person wants, can't spare even the smallest amount to pay back people who have taken care of him. And so, it's a case study in looking beyond the superficial and what a person has materially to who a person is in character, in their essence. And David's character, which has been so dramatically tested as he goes from difficult encounter to difficult encounter in the desert, in solitude, in the wilderness, and David continues to impress. Under the most dire circumstances. And Naval, who has everything a person could ever want, his character is desiccated. Total model desiccation. And so the Navi is teaching us, of course, the same lesson over again. Look past the superficial. If I were to tell you there was one guy who had everything in the world in the story, and the other guy who had nothing, a band of 600 vagabonds, And the story is about how, despite their opposite material conditions, David is proving exactly why God wants him to be the king of Israel. And Nabal is proving exactly why that's the name that he'll be forever known to posterity with. So next week, what we're going to take a look at is how Abigail is able to turn David. Remember what Navi said. V'ha'isha tovat seichel. She was very wise. She was very intelligent. David is enraged. David has his sword out. He's with 400 men. He's in Esav mode. Okay? How is Abigail going to be able to turn David around and to make sure that he does not sully his own name? He does not compromise his moral legacy, which he has worked so hard to build. Just last chapter, he was unwilling to harm Shaul, even though Shaul was clearly eroding, was clearly harming, clearly trying to kill him. Right, so we'll take a look at all that, God willing, next week. The following week, and that will be on, there will be a 1 week break, the Yeshiva week, and then we'll be back on 2 weeks from then, okay? So again, next week, we have this 1 week from tonight, we're on. 2 weeks from tonight, we'll be off, and then we'll be back on for the duration of the term as we come to the end of Sefer Shmuel Aleph over the course of the next few weeks. Okay, everybody have a wonderful evening.